Terra, California, with Chris Miller, the co-founder of Life Plays. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Well, let's start off with Life Plays. Can you explain what you do?
Life Plays was born out of... I've been teaching improvisational theater, for about 15 years, and we were teaching in Silicon Valley, and a lot of our students were from Google and Genentech and places like that, and they were loving the classes. They were loving the feeling of being able to create so easily and have a good time doing it and work together, the whole collaborative aspect of improv. And they started saying, God, it would be so nice if it could be like this at work. And we went, well, it can be. And so we started, that's when we formed Life Plays. And Life Plays was basically to take the skills of improv into the workplace in whatever arena they're looking for this type of collaboration, cooperation, and creativity. And that was about, I think maybe 6 years ago that we started doing that.
What kinds of teams or groups within these companies are you working with?
It always varies. I mean, sometimes we'll get just a whole bunch of like administrative assistants who just want to be able to interact more easily with one another and with their bosses. We've worked with product development teams, getting them to be able, same thing, to be on the same page and to be able to create together much more fluidly, like find that zone of creativity where they can really flow together and all work as a team as opposed to just, you know, a group of individuals. It's a really bonding way of being together. So it's yeah, like that. And what else? Well, with large grocery chain, we've worked with a lot of with groups of store managers, getting them working on leadership skills to be able to be actually not just managers but leaders that people look up to and create this whole atmosphere of respect and trust and value of all the people around them with one another and with the people that are working underneath them on the floor. So yeah, a wide variety of different types of teams.
I want to ask you to say more about one thing you described, the flow and the zone of creativity. What's that about?
Yeah, well, improv, I mean, a lot of people, you know it's a theater form and usually in comedy, but essentially the core, what we do at improv is it becomes, well, I call it a state of acute cooperation. And so what this does is you get everyone working together. The core skill of improv is called yes and. And yes and is this amazing umbrella that just covers all these other little more minor skills in improv. But what yes and is, the yes is accepting what your partner says as true for them. It's not agreeing with it or saying you're going to do it. It's like, oh, they said this. This is true. And the and is building on it. So it's taking, and probably call it an offer, what your partner says. So it's taking this offer and building on it. And what this does is it connects you together. The yes connects you with your partner. The and, you move forward together. So this, when you start getting this as part of your, just how you operate, it creates this flow. And because flow is just basically in this arena, just being able to work together with someone and move forward without any blockages, just moving forward, that's what flow is. And so by practicing yes and getting it in your body and in your, you know, in your whole psyche, you start creating this flow with people, you know, where it's just effortless to move forward and co-create, or, you know, whatever it is that you're looking to do, but to co-create together. And that's the core, that's the essence of improv, is creating, you know, using yes and creating this flow and this, you know, like I said, what at Life Plays we call it a state of acute cooperation.
There's a really great exercise where you you ask two people or three people to try to solve a problem, and one time through they respond with yes and mm-hmm. the other time through they respond with no but.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazingly clear how it's impossible for that group to complete the exercise if they're saying no but.
Yeah. Nothing happens. And I mean, that's the wonderful thing about this. It's not necessarily you're going to do these things you're saying yes to, but you're moving together as a group, and later on you can go back and sort of, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff and get what you want to keep. But it really, it moves you together. And yeah, exactly, when you start saying no but, then you grind to a halt. And actually the other interesting thing about that is that I think as humans, our brains are wired for pleasure. You know, we like pleasure, and part of pleasure is being affirmed and valued. And so when you start responding with yes and, your whole brain just opens up and your creativity flows. You know, if you're ever in a situation like that where someone keeps shooting down your ideas, you just, all of a sudden, your brain, you stop getting ideas. you basically start shutting down and nothing flows. And so this is just another way of just keeping you open and keeping ideas flowing. Even if you don't use them, you can go back later and go, we don't want to do this, we don't want to do this, this is good. Oh, look what we got from there. But just keeping the flow going, just keeping the yes to just that pause. And it sounds so simple. It's just like, be positive. And it's a practicable, learnable skill to put in this whole context.
I think that's some of the great thing about improv is that it even though people imagine it as being about sort of unleashing open-ended creativity, it still provides lots of structure in order to make that happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For example, you are going, in this exercise, you're going to respond to any idea with yes and.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very performable act.
Yeah.
And then that helps you move from these sort of overt behaviors to get into that level of creativity you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a learnable skill, and it's very concrete. And I think the wonderful thing about improv, I think it's Edward de Bono was talking in one of his books about how, I think lateral thinking, he was talking about how the brain, most humans, your brain works a certain way. If you tend to be logical, you're kind of logical everywhere. You'll be logical at work, you'll be logical when you're shopping, you'll be logical when you're washing your car. It's just that's how you work. So what we do with improv training is we practice this way of being, this yes and, in basically a disposable medium, improv, and it doesn't matter what you do, and you practice basically flexing this muscle in this realm and say, this is what it feels like. Oh, these are the results I get. This is how I do this. I relax, I be open, I don't judge. And we practice it there, and then we transfer it over to the work scenarios and say, now do this exact same thing we just did with these disposable games or exercises, and let's take it to where you want this to live in your life. And you already have it in your body, because this stuff lives in your body. It's not a concept, like you're saying. It's a very concrete, doable thing. And so then you take it over there, and you start to see what the results are over there. And I mean, it's very different. I mean, we're trained to be analytical and critical thinkers, and which is great. I mean, that's a perfect, wonderful thing. And you have to be able to choose when to do it and when not to do it. And it's tremendously useful at some stages of ideation or collaboration, but it's not great everywhere. Other places, like you were saying, with the yes but or the no but, it just shuts you down.
When you describe the disposable problems,
yeah,
and the affirmation, it sounds like you're creating a very low risk way to do things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very low risk because there's nothing at stake. I think the only thing at stake is maybe looking silly. And we're really good at creating an environment where people are willing to, let that one go very easily.
Well, there's something about, improv performances, ideation, brainstorming, all those things where each micro step that you take is very low risk and is very disposable,
mm-hmm.
but that's the way to get to a valuable endpoint.
Yeah,
if you
exactly.
want to, if four people are going to sit down for half a day to develop new ideas for a new product concept, that's a very important goal. The goal isn't disposable. But these small, disposable, risk-free behaviors,
yeah,
and it's kind of counterintuitive. You have to behave in a low-investment way
mm-hmm.
to get to a high-reward payoff.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's like training almost. I mean, it's definitely part of the journey, and it's part of the training. And it's, you build in these things that are completely disposable, but while you're doing these and disposing of them, you're gaining these skills. And then when you get to the end, you have this whole new way of being. Because essentially, improv, it is a set of behaviors, but the behaviors basically change who you are. You start becoming less judgmental, much more flexible in how you're able to think. And you reach that just by doing these little incremental steps. And then when you get to the end, you say, this is where we are now, and this is you're able to work in a whole new way.
Because these are new muscles you're building up.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's that, and it's, yeah. It's lots of fun. That's the other thing. It's like people have a blast doing this, and so it's really nice. I think years ago I was teaching English as a second language, and the place we were trained at, they were talking about the idea of just having fun. And I remember the principal who trained us saying one of the ways that he judged how much learning was going on was by how much laughter. Because his whole thought on it is like, when you're laughing and having fun, you're that much more open. And to receive and get information and change who you are, the more open you can be, the better. And so, this isn't, it's you know, way more about just having fun, and that's a component of it. I mean, that fun definitely opens you up, and this stuff's lots of fun, and there's, you know, huge skills embedded in it.
Years ago, when I was taking improv classes and doing performances, and I would tell people that this was something I was involved in, I so often heard people say, "Wow, I would love to do improv, but I don't think I'm very funny."
Yeah.
And there's some belief for people that haven't been involved in it that humor and the ability to generate funny content is something you have to bring into it.
Yeah, and that's so unrelated. I mean, I love the fact that Whose Line Is It Anyway is on TV, just because it gives a wide, you know, really deep profile to improv. And improv, at its purest sense, has nothing to do with being funny, clever, or witty. It's really about just being in the moment, listening to what your partner says and building on it. And even, you know, people who say they aren't funny, you the objective is not to be funny, and really funny stuff happens.
That's the line that the instructor I worked with used to say, that funny will come.
Yeah.
And that I think it's like we're talking about these disposable problems, that if you perform and you try to be funny and you act like a stand-up comedian or an actor,
mm-hmm.
that isn't necessarily as funny. But if you just take the offers, build on things, be with the people, as a side effect, it creates instances that are very funny.
Yeah, it's about commitment. You know, when you're up there, you're not audiencing. I mean, up there meaning in class or on stage. You're not audiencing, you're not thinking about it, you're really in the moment. And this, of course, is, you know, through training you get to be able to do that. You're not judging, and you're just listening. And then someone will say something, and you start building on this stuff, and you go to whole new places that you would not have gone if you said, "Oh, wait, that doesn't make sense, I better do something else." You just take that as like, "Oh, this is where we are." You know, you just handed me a towel because my house needs painting. Okay, I'll work with that. You know, as opposed to, "Wait, no, I need a paintbrush." And you build on that, and the funny happens just from doing it. And that's the thing about Whose Line Is It Anyway. I mean, those guys are like brilliant ad-lib comedians. And they're unbelievably good at what they're doing. And most of the improvisers I know who are spectacular improvisers could not do that because it's a different thing. They really are. Those guys are like, bang, being funny. And what we do is so not that. It's just being in the moment, being present, being flexible, listening really intently to your partner, and accepting everything they give you. You know, the whole yes and thing.
It seems, just from my experiences being in improv and then watching improv happen, that that sometimes it's funny for the people that are involved in it, but it doesn't show well, like the TV show is, you know, improvised humor that is interesting for an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think, and probably for some of your groups that you're doing and the folks that you're training, they may be just rolling on the floor.
Yeah.
But for anyone else watching it would be just the funny isn't there.
Yeah.
The humor comes out of that collaboration, that creativity.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, like I said, it's so much, it's about being present, and the funny, you know, sometimes the funny is there, and I mean, half the time, actually, the people, it kind of goes the other way, too. The people who are doing the thing don't see the funny, and the audience, you know, in the classroom, we're losing it. I mean, it's unbelievably funny, and they don't know what's going on stage. They're just going through this game or this scene, and they're so committed and just listening and building, and we're rolling on the floor, and they have no idea why. They get done, they kind of look at us, going, "Yeah, what was so funny?" And you can barely tell them. You know, it's on the outside because they're lost. They're committed. They're focused. They're in this thing.
There's something about, to me, a lot of the humor comes from, I mean, these improv games are little problems that you have to solve where
exactly.
Your behavior is constrained.
Yeah.
The one I like to tell people about is two people have to act out a scene, and the different parts of the stage they're on represent different genres of film.
Mm-hmm.
So as you move and have a dialogue between a husband and wife or something, as you move you physically through that space, you have to change the way that you're acting.
Yeah.
And it's hard to describe. And it's a real cognitive challenge. So
mm-hmm.
the people that are performing that game are really, really focused, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Very, very committed.
Yeah.
And I think some of the humor comes from watching them solve the problem.
Yeah.
And thinking about how you would solve the problem and seeing sort of the parts that work and the parts that don't work.
Yeah.
So that disposability, I think, creates some of the humor.
Yeah. Because, I mean, just that exactly. The person on stage, they know that if when they're on the right-hand side, they're in a Western. When they're in the middle of the stage, they're in Shakespeare. And they're on the left side, they're doing film noir. And so as they walk across the stage, because it's fun to challenge yourself. I mean, that's the fun, is like push yourself to the edge and just see what happens. You know, you walk from the Western to the noir to the, you know, short of the Shakespeare to the noir, and just see what comes out of your mouth. You know, and it's not about getting it right. It's about committing, you know, and not real, you know. The great joy in improv is the fact that it's disposable and it really doesn't matter. You know, no one's dying on the operating table here. You know, it's just what happens, you know, how focused can I stay when I cross this line and go from noir to Shakespeare mid-sentence? You know, and you're talking about the dishes and you're walking across the stage and you're, you know, in the noir and you're, you know, I think you better do these dishes. They've been sitting here collecting eggs. And I don't like the way the eggs are coming up around. And then all of a sudden you step into Shakespeare. Around the edge of yon plate. For yon plate gets dirty and no longer looks like the moon rising above the sequined sea that stretches out before me. Yeah, it's just, it's fun to, you know, like that. It's like, I didn't know what was going to happen. But you just walk in and you do it. And you enjoy the process. And improv, you know, the skills of improv teach you to be that committed. And you're not audiencing yourself. You're not thinking about it. You're not judging. Because it's all disposable. But what you're getting, the more you do this on stage and in class, is you're building up these muscles of trust. You know, trusting your impulses, trusting yourself, moving forward through these old voices that would judge you but are now silent. I mean, it's great to have those voices silent. You know, it's so nice to move through life and not be sort of critiquing yourself or critiquing other people. You're looking at it positively.
So while we're role playing, let me take on the guise of the prospective client or the person in some organization that mm-hmm. says, you know, I don't want my folks acting out film noir stuff. I want them doing the thing they're tasked with. I want them assisting the people they're supposed to be assisting, or ideating, or developing concepts,
yeah.
or you know, or moving products. You know, I think you've said it, but maybe it's worth at this point just kind of linking back
yeah.
again. How do these kinds of skills? That engaging in very disposable behavior, which is not what mm-hmm. business is really predicated
no,
on,
no.
How does that create new skills, and how does that bring value to organizations?
Yeah, well, I say, I mean, for example, one of the most common things is people complain about meetings being a total waste of time. I mean, I hear this all the time. And so, say, for example, we want